Thank you again, Mr. Golden. I'm ready for them to sit down and eat. I guess we're going to do that. So, but it's fine. I was just sitting listening to the sermonette, and I was thinking it's hard to concentrate when you do have background noise. So I feel for you. I was able to listen to a sermonette for that entire time. So it's a little bit more difficult. Again, we can appreciate what we have this way. Sometimes we, you know, want to complain about something, and then something worse comes along, and we think, well, we have pretty good. It's not so bad. I'm calling this sermon, I'll give you the title right now, When You See. When You See. Now, you don't know what you're going to see, but that is taken from the Bible. There's a couple times in the New Testament where you see those words. I'll start by saying we do live in unprecedented times. We do know that prophecies are being fulfilled, and at the end time, all the prophecies that apply to Christ before his coming will be fulfilled, and it may be just a few years off. But we realize that in the past 5 years, there has been what we call a watershed moment. That thought came to mind when I was starting to put the sermon together. And then I looked the term up to make sure I remembered what it was, and it is what I thought. But the definition, at least one definition of watershed, it doesn't apply in every case in this instance, but it is an important historical change. It can mean this. It doesn't have to mean this, but it does, depending on the situation, an important historical change, of course, or one on which important developments depend. Now, we realize, and those of us who've been receiving the Plain Truth magazine since we were young, maybe before we were young, and that would be Mr. Neff was younger than I when he came into the truth through his parents, but we know what the church has taught over the years. We realize that the prophecies that are given in the Bible that we thought were going to be fulfilled a long time ago were not fulfilled, but those prophecies still are there. But there are two watershed moments that I can think of, and these are not my assessment. You'll see this as you look at those who describe what's happened in the last 5 years, one of them being Russia attacking or having a minor conflict with Ukraine, of course, more so than that. That was a watershed moment, as it turned out. And when you read about what's happening over in Europe with the European Union, you realize that they do call that a turning point, a historical turning point. It was a big thing because if you were in World War I, and I don't think there's too many people alive who were actually in World War I, but in World War II also, if you were there, you would realize that after a war that took the lives of multiple millions of people, and you see what's happening in Europe now, you would say, oh no. And that's what they're saying. Oh no. What in the world is happening? The other is President Trump, believe it or not. This is the other one that is used. You'll see why there's been a change in Europe and the movement toward establishing a stronger military. You'll see that President Trump is involved in that also. Those two things are mentioned all the time. There may be a third, but I've only seen those two. And that is when President Trump said, you don't pay up, then we're not going to, we'll pull out of NATO. And worse yet, I think in the last year he said, I don't give a, whatever he said, if Russia attacks a NATO country, he said, I'm not going to come to their aid. We're not going to help. That made it even worse because it was already bad enough when President Trump said, we're not going to give NATO our money. We'll pull out. When you think about the election coming up, And we know we either like this, let me put it this way, we either dislike the president in office or we dislike the one running for office to take back his spot. I don't know if any of us like. It's dislike and dislike overall in the church, that is. But still, we may have, you know, an opinion, but God is there and God is saying, I'm going to fulfill prophecy. That's what I'm going to do. And you may like it, may not like it, and I may not even like the guy that I put in office. But still, I am going to fulfill prophecy. And so the Europeans are kind of shaking in their boots. At least that's what someone said about it after services this morning, that they really don't want President Trump in office. We'll see. But whatever the case, there is a wake-up call in Europe to become stronger. I don't know if we know it, but the strongest economy in the world is the European Union. It is not Japan. It is not the United States. It is not China. The strongest economy in the world is the European Union. Maybe we could say are the European Union, because there's quite a few countries involved. But the title of the sermon, like I said, is When You See, because we look at prophecy and we see that the in Luke, New Testament, it does tell us to be watching, to take a look. So we ask, why is God interested? Because when you read about the end time, we see that God wants us not to be politically involved. Not at all. He does not want us to be politically involved, because he wants to be politically involved. He's calling all the shots. But he does want us to be aware. He doesn't want us to get our doctorate in prophecy of what's going to happen. It's not that big. But what I'm saying is, when something comes along of note, then we should be seeing what's going on. And this is what I mean. We're not going to be studying it every day. We're not going to be reading a lot of articles on it every day. It's not that. It's that when the news happens, we need to be aware of it. And we are to see. We definitely are. Luke 21 and verse 20. Luke 21 and verse 20. Here, as we know, chapter 21, and we may forget that it's a chapter on prophecy, but when we begin reading Luke 21, we recognize that it is. Luke 21 and verse 20. Here it tells us, when you see. So that tells us right away what? Well, he's talking to Christians who will be living somewhere in the, well, in the last generation, because it's going to hit the last generation. That could be us. It may be one more generation down the line. So this sermon is not to tell us it's just around the corner, but it is to tell us we need to, since Jerusalem is there, and since there are armies that certainly could surround Jerusalem for the first time since, there have been wars over there, we know. And we certainly thought in 1965, 66. I was in England at the time, and we thought that we were going to have a radio. I think it was out of Jordan, maybe, whatever it was. So we thought things were really heating up, and we were going to preach the gospel out of Jordan, out of the Middle East. And then that fell flat because there was a war over there. And then that made us all the more think, wow, things are really, really heating up. And there were probably some in this room that weren't born yet in 1965. You don't have to raise your hand because you probably can't remember that you weren't born. You just know you weren't. But we realized that I was way ahead of things. And if Christ would have come in 1971, that was 53 years ago. So when you see, what does that tell us again? When you see, that means we are watching. We are aware that there is something that is going to happen at the end time, whether it happens in our life or not. Most of the ministers, and I had a list of the ministers that was handed out in freshman class in 1962-63, and I just happened to come across those the other day, and I think 95% of all those ministers have died. Mr. Neff and I weren't on that list yet. We were in college. And you know we haven't died. Probably you know that. That reminds me of a joke where an attorney is talking to a doctor and saying, now, doctor, if someone dies while they're sleeping, they don't know about it till the morning, do they? And the doctor said, did you pass your bar exam? Do you get it? I don't know if you get it. Yeah, they're dead. They're not going to wake up and know that they died. But anyway, it's amazing what's happened. Another generation has passed since 1961, 62, most of the generation. But we are noting it. We are aware of what is going on. This is what, and we can see the whole context of Luke 21. We can see where it's headed and how there will be a time. Well, let me go to verse 22. And verse 31, but verse 22 says, these are the days of vengeance that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And the context here is the coming of Jesus Christ, so that all things may be fulfilled at that time before the coming of Jesus Christ. Verse 31 and 32, so you also, when you see, verse 31 and 32, when you see these things happening. And I don't know if this is prophetic in the sense that God knew we would literally be seeing, but in fact, we will be seeing all of these things come to pass because we have telephones, we have computers, we have TV sets, and it is going to be a huge worldwide event that people take notice of, and we will see. Now, I don't know if the writer, again, you know, when you see could mean when you're aware of it, but whatever the case, we will be seeing it. But we have to know it's coming. There's something about it when we read down a little farther in verse 34 and verse 35. We'll come back to that later on, but it says that it's going to come so quickly that it'll be a snare to the world. To the whole world will be shocked when it happens because they just will not expect things to transpire so very quickly, but they will. Okay, the attitude at the end time, that is what? 2 Peter 3 and verse 4. And I've said this to you before, but I still remember my track coach using this. He wasn't talking about the speed in high school of the runners, but you know how teenagers are. And he said, you guys, he wants us over. Come on, guys, come on, come here. Need to talk to you. And we're, you know, lollygagging along. And everybody, you know, nobody's going to run fast to please the coach. They're going to look around to see what the other high schoolers are doing. You know, are they running fast? No, I want to just, you know, mosey over there at the same speed so I'm not picked on later on like, yeah, you know, the coach's favorite. Nobody wanted to be the coach's favorite that way. So 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4, the coach said to us, you guys are slower than the coming of Jesus Christ, is what he said. And that hit me because I went to church. I didn't know, you know, that he was quoting 2 Peter chapter 3. But 2 Peter 3 and verse 4, he wasn't really quoting it, but evidently he knew of it. So at the end time, and here under the chapter 3 heading, there's a subtitle, and it's called Mockery in the Last Days. Mockery in the Last Days. And he says, at the end time here, people will be walking according to their own lusts and saying, verse 4, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. So whatever he had in mind, he did talk about the beginning of creation, that nothing is different. There's nothing to show that Jesus Christ is going to come soon. And because it's a mockery, it's like, well, Jesus Christ is really not coming. There's no way. Everything is the same. Things are going along well. Sure, there's wars, there's earthquakes. But hey, no big deal. People today, if you ask them, is Christ going to come? I don't even know what they would say. They might say, who is Christ? But I think they know enough. But there have been questions asked by ministers or whoever is taking the views of people, I guess. And they come up with all types of ideas, like, is there a hell? Is there a heaven? Hell on earth is living in my high school or something like that, all types of situations. But anyway, people just are not, well, let me say this. Our son told me when this thing started happening in Ukraine, our son said, people of my age are oblivious to what's happening in the world. Now, we are not oblivious, but 55-year-olds don't care a bit. They've got their own world going on. They may have heard it on the news, but they don't really tie it into anything, especially the coming of Jesus Christ. So where is the coming of Jesus Christ? Where is the promise? So we're to see Ezekiel 33. It's interesting. I haven't used this scripture in a long time, but concerning seeing, we can also think about watching. Ezekiel chapter 33, verses 6 and 7. And you'll be familiar with it as soon as I get to it. It's talking about a watchman, and it also tells us what's happening on this earth again about people being aware of what's going on at the end time. Ezekiel 33, verses 6 and 7. If the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. Now, I'm not concentrating on that except to say that the church is responsible for warning the world. Sometimes we don't think of that, but the church is responsible for warning the world. Are we warning the world? The answer is yes. The literature is there. If people tune in, and they don't have to look too far either to see what we are teaching. The warning message is there. The word watch is there. So what does this tell us, though? It tells us that you can have a war that's coming, and people don't know. It is interesting how you can be so isolationist that you cut yourself off from the rest of the world, and you don't know too much, or you just don't want to be involved. From the time of George Washington, we've been an isolationist country. We didn't want to be involved in foreign wars. I think he had Jefferson and Adams, who both had different ideas of who our friends were. One liked France and the other liked England. I think, Adams was over in Europe for a long time. Jefferson also was over there. And one liked the British and one liked the French. But Washington was not going to pick sides at all. We're going to stay out of foreign wars. And we've been an isolationist country in World War I. The war started in 1914. We didn't join in until 1917. It took 3 years. So we like to, as Americans, stay out of it. Second World War, the war starts in 1939, and we don't get involved until 1941, to Churchill's dismay. He wanted the United States to get involved right away. President Roosevelt wanted to win the election, so he was not going to get us in a war where he wasn't going to be elected again. At least that was part of it. There we go, off and on. Is that coming from here? Okay, now you can hear me. Now you can wake up. That woke you up. No, again, I say that tongue in cheek because I've never seen anybody here go to sleep. Maybe it's over there too. Maybe we can give them a watchman's warning. So what is the church saying? What are we preaching? I saw about a month ago a series of articles. Not all of them were written at the time, but Isaac Khalil is the name of one of our writers. He was recently ordained an elder down in New Zealand, but Isaac is quite a prolific writer. And he started writing a series of articles on world news and end time prophecy. I don't know when he finished up because I typed the first two out. I didn't type it out. I had the printer print it out. And then I didn't get back to it for a couple weeks. And I just noticed that the last two in the series was just written. But basically, it's world news and end time prophecy. I'm not going to go through it. You can go to it yourself. You can either just type in on the search engine, Isaac Khalil. That's a K-H-A-L-I-L. And he is a Middle East. He's an Egyptian, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So you have an Egyptian writing about the Middle East. That's kind of cool. World news. But he has four areas that he covers, one each in a series, and that is the people and the nations and counterfeit Christianity, and then another one on hope. So you might want to check those out. But it is interesting how just on the first couple pages, he tells us where he's going. And he pretty much tells us that the United States is unraveling, going downhill because of moral depravity. And then he gets into what's going to happen in Europe and what's going to happen in the Middle East. So people reading this, I hope, are interested. And we give them in the first couple pages some information about the king of the north, the king of the south, and trouble coming out of the east, and the end time, Armageddon, I guess, as MacArthur called it. But anyway, this is what the church is teaching, and we're asking people to be aware of what is going on. So I have also then the, Life, Hope, and Truth from Clyde Kylo, and on that one we realize that we have, Mr. Bennett, a father of one of our people here, is especially into the World Watch Weekly section under what is sent out by Mr. Kylo. And he says there's five prophetic trends to watch. So we want people to watch. Five prophetic trends to watch. One is the threat to human existence, the annihilation of all human flesh off the face of the earth. Moral trends is the second one. The ride of the four horsemen of the apocalypse is the third one. The Middle East, actually I don't have these in order. I put these in an order where I'm going. But the Middle East is a fourth one. And then Europe is a fifth one. Those two are involved. So if the watchman is seeing the sword coming, if the watchman is looking at what is developing based on what we know about prophecy, we want people to watch these things. We may be ahead of our time as far as when it's going to happen, but the church has the responsibility to warn the world, and we are. If we go back to, let's take a look, first of all, because since the war started over in Russia, Ukraine, and we saw what's coming, and we looked at some articles concerning the development of the European Union, I started just taking anything that came up, European EU news. There's a program on TV, but also you can download an app. And the European news not only talks about what's happening in Europe, the European Union, Middle East, but basically major events all over the world. For example, when the Slovakian, was it, prime minister was shot five times this past week. He's part of NATO, Slovakia, but he's pro-Russian and pro-Putin. And I thought, you know, that fits into prophecy too, because you're only going to have 10 nations, not the 27 or whatever it is right now. Some of those nations are not going to be in NATO at all. They're not going to fit in. But when you see these things happening, they covered, of course, that's Europe. They would cover that. But they cover what's happening in the United States also, especially with the U.S. election. But what I have done then, I just take and send it to my file, send it to my email, basically. And then when it comes up, I just take and punch it and move it over to a file called Europe or the Middle East or Germany, one of those three, basically, so I can get back to them. I usually don't read them all right away. I take note of the headlines, and I think, well, I may be interested in that later on. Some of them I'm not, because it's not what I thought they would be. But you can pretty well tell what the article is about just from a one-liner there. And so I'll read you some of those one-liners so you know what's happening of dates in the last 2-3 years. I've only started doing this about 2 years ago. So basically we have then, well, one came in this morning because I opened my Word file. Well, I don't open my Word file usually. I open my Google account. I don't even know if I open that one. I open a couple accounts to see the news. And so the Euro News is one that I open, along with texts and things like that that may be coming back in the church that need to be taken care of. But this one came in, and it's Poland, Europe's Defense Sentinel, ? By a woman named Valerie Gariot. And it's published in 10/05/2024. And I looked at that and I thought, wait a minute, they made a mistake. Published 10/05/2024. So my test question right now is, why did they do that? It's because they're right in the way they put dates down, and we're wrong. We go month, then back to day, and then forward to year. They go day, month, year. So the day is the 10th, and that made sense to me. But I had to think about it for a few moments. It's like somebody really, really made a big mistake here. But it was today. And it talked about on April the 22nd, 5,000 soldiers from 7 different European countries, NATO countries, were sent over to one of the countries in NATO, one of the other countries. I think it may have been to Poland, or it could have been, oh, I think I have it here. It was to Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia is where they were sent, I believe. But in this article, it says, everything is done to prepare our society to defend itself in the event of an attack. This type of statement would not have been made 10 years ago. They weren't defending themselves. Maybe Ukraine would have stated that, because they have been under attack by Russia. But he said, whether it's science fiction scenario that Putin will attack us or not, it's good to be prepared. You're going to see the term defend and security and peace that is a main issue right now in the European Union. But going on in this article, it says, we never had a greater sense of such immediate threat. Now, they never did? Well, since when? Well, this generation never has. Poland wasn't threatened, I don't think. They were just attacked right away, a surprise attack. Setup attack, of course, if you'll read the story. But going on then, I have 24 articles that I saw that I had put in a file, 24. And I'll just give you some highlights. I'm going to read you basically the one-liner on it so you can kind of get an idea of what's going on and why we should be seeing. When you see, because we should be seeing some of these things. Okay. One, and they're not in any order, they're not in any date order, but they're all within the last, probably the last year, maybe year and a half. If the EU wants to be a global power, That tells you something, doesn't it? Do they want to be a global power? Yes, they do. They want to be a global power. As I mentioned already, they're the strongest economic power in the world. Another one. Europe needs their own air defense to avoid reliance on the U.S., urges Macron, who is the leader in France, barely. And I'm not sure he's going to make it the next round. Then first German troops arrive in Lithuania. Why was that so important? Because if you're a World War II veteran, and this would have happened back in 1946, after the Second World War, you would have probably had a heart attack. Because it's like, what? And what? If first German troops arrive, first time they send German troops to another country. The last time they did it was Battle of the Bulge, when they had, I think, seven divisions who got together, and Hitler decided that that would be the place to make an all-out effort to try to win at least a stalemate, is what he was looking for. And he sent seven divisions with 1 million men into the Battle of the Bulge, and we only had 80,000 men there at the time. It took us days to realize what was happening. So that was the last time any force from Germany was sent anywhere. Another one, Poland, France, and Germany vow to make Europe stronger as fears grow over Russia and Trump. There you have those two names, and it comes up quite often. Russia and Trump. Why do you need to defend? And why do you need to be involved in the political affairs of other countries? It's because Germany is the best country at mediating peace. I'll repeat that. Germany is the best country at mediating peace. They think they are. That's back in 2012 that they started stating those things. Okay, another one. EU defense priority even for Euroskeptics. So Euroskeptics, meaning individuals who are skeptical about the unification of Europe, they still believe that they need a strong defense. They do. And again, there's many that I'm not even reading here. Can Germany be neutral when it comes to the Gaza war? And the answer is, well, they haven't been neutral. They have been pro or anti-Palestinian. They have been pro-Israeli, right from the very start. And then another one. France, Germany, Italy back the EU, European Union, sanctions to target Hamas. And then one, the Israeli-Hamas war. Tensions flare across the EU ahead of the leaders' summit. Okay, so that's basically it, but there are three here, and I'm going to just read a little bit from these. They're not long, but basically we have Wind of Change is the name of the article. It's out of the Euro News. Wind of Change, Germany gets serious about plans to make military fit for war. Someone was telling me after services this morning that they're going to start conscription, where now it's just volunteer in Germany, volunteering to go to war, to be in the military, of course. But Germany is up in arms. They don't want to have draft, basically, is what we're talking about here. So basically, though, it goes on and says, the return of full-scale armed conflict to Europe has Germany dramatically reframing its security policy. They're not going to use the term going to war. It's defense is what they're looking at, and security and peace. They want peace. Just one statement out of this article. The European Union and NATO are feeling their way into a chaotic new world security order. And Europe's largest economy is shaking up decades-old ideas on what its military is actually for. And they now are thinking, we know what it's for. Another article I'll mention before this last one. There's another article on Egypt on the Brink, and it's talking about Egypt retaliating if the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Force, decides to move into Rafah. And if you're watching anything, they've already moved into Rafah. So this is a couple of weeks old. And it said that Egypt may cancel their treaty that they have with Israel if they actually come into Rafah. And if they do, it said, it's going to be a geopolitical nightmare for both Israel and Egypt. So how much is this going to heat up? I don't know. There's been so many pauses. I don't think anything's going to happen that soon because I don't think the Europeans are ready for any peacemaking, we'll call it, any intervention in other places. They already have intervened some. They've sent their forces over there to protect our barges, you know, that have been destroyed by Hamas. But whatever the case, you have to have that, watch that too. But the other one is an article. In fact, Marion was talking about this one as we came back, wondering, you know, if this where this came from. It's called "The Problem Will Be Germany," and it's from Brave New Europe. That's what it's called. "The Problem Will Be Germany." It says, "In the modern world, things connect, but often not the way we expect. Russia, we are told, must lose in Ukraine or the whole international order will crumble. China's rise, we are warned, poses a similar challenge. We must, if not decouple entirely, at least de-risk." Then he goes on to say, "Yes, in reality, the biggest headache is likely to come from within, from Germany." And it's like, what does he know? Well, there was a guy named Luigi Barzini, and I've mentioned that book probably 5, 6, 7 times in the last 3 years. He's the one that wrote the book on the Europeans. And in his last chapter, on the last page, he said, "All depends on Germany." Well, this guy goes on to say, "Within living memory, it was Germany that didn't just disrupt, but smashed international order not once, but twice, 1914 and 1939. The irony is that if old Germany was too assertive, new Germany is too submissive. And the trigger for this to backfire is the war over Ukraine." Then he goes on to explain, "We've assumed that the first country to buckle under the economic strain of the war over Ukraine would be Russia." Then he went on to say, "If it's Germany that stumbles first, Germans stressed about their economy, distrusting their elites as favoring foreign interests, and disenchanted with centrist values and methods, a picture too familiar for comfort." Because what happened before World War II? World War II started because of what happened in Germany. They were supposed to pay the other countries retribution for all the damage they did, and it put Germany into an economic collapse. You heard about paying factory workers, and you get a wheelbarrow full of money to pay one day's wage. I don't know if that was exaggerated, but that's what I've read. So in other words, you don't want the Germans to start feeling distressed because they're not a happy couple or country when that happens. So let's go back to Luke 21, because these are the things that we see. Again, when I see an article, I don't open it. I don't get totally entranced with it at all. I see it and I put it in a file. I might read a headline, maybe a paragraph, but I'm not going to take all my time to be involved in that. There's so many other things we can do. We do need to be seeing what is going on, though. We need to take note. We need to watch. It's what we have to do. So Luke 21, and coming back to where we were, basically, Luke 21 is written in such a way where it writes up to a certain point in chapter 21 about Christ's coming and the new heavens and the new earth, or signs, better yet, that are in the heavens And then it stops. And I'll show you what it says, and doesn't pick it up for another 14 verses. Because God is going to tell us what we are going to be seeing. Luke chapter 21 and verse 14, 13 and 14. Luke 21. In fact, let's start back in verse 10. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. So chapter 21 and verse 10. And there will be great earthquakes in various places and famines and pestilences, and there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. But notice what it says next. But before all these things, before all these things. So we have, of course, the heavenly signs. You know, we have the trumpets, you have the plagues, you have the opening of each seal. So you've got the seven seals. So we know that the signs in the heavens is one of the last sign before the coming of Jesus Christ. But all of a sudden you have a break here, and you're not going to pick it up until you come to verse 25. Verse 25 says, subtitle, The Second Coming. And it says, there will be signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars. So it picks back up the signs in the heaven. In the meantime, it's going to give you the details of what happens before Christ's coming. And here's what it says. There will be great earthquakes in various places and famines, verse 11, and signs. But before all these things, verse 12, they will lay hands on you and persecute you. That has to happen before the coming of Jesus Christ and before we see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. There is a period of time where the Christians will be persecuted. And, of course, it goes on to say that God grants us a time so we can testify. They'll deliver you up to the synagogues. You can tell that there were things that would happen back in that time, because why would you be delivered to the synagogues? Because the Jews did not accept the Messiah. That's why. The Jews were not accepting Jesus Christ as the Messiah. And prisons. We will see that we will be brought before kings and rulers for Christ's sake, but it will turn out for you as an occasion to testify. Therefore, settle in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you're going to answer. God is going to put those words in your mouth. You will be betrayed even by parents. So what will we see? I haven't been betrayed by my parents, even though my mother didn't like this religion at all. I wasn't betrayed by her. I think I was cut out of their will. Then I was put back in their will. I think that's what happened somewhere along the line. But that was only because my mother loved my wife. So that was, and our kids. She actually loved our kids too. And she loved me. She did. I'm not saying she didn't. But there will come a time when that won't happen, where there won't be a change of heart. Or where there will be a change of heart will not happen again. Betrayed by parents. We will see this coming, brethren. But just think, you know, bringing it to reality, you think, I could be betrayed by my brother, my sister? And the answer is, yes, it is possible that I could be betrayed. Because that won't just happen at any time. The end time is going to happen. Relatives and friends. And they will put some of you to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But not a hair of your head spiritually shall be lost. By your patience, possess your souls. So be patient. There's still a little bit of time before Christ comes. And there will be martyrdom. But, verse 20, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that the desolation is near. And then it goes on from there. So there are certain things that we will see. And we know the background. We know the King of the North, we know the King of the South, we know the King of the East. We know that the King of the North will plant its tabernacle or its headquarters outside of Jerusalem. And eventually, within the time of maybe a month and a half or so, we can go back to Daniel 12 for some of those details, if we understand them completely. But there will be a time period before Jerusalem is surrounded. And during that period of time, it seems like God is giving the church time to flee, get its house in order. But whatever the case, let's go down to now verse 34. Take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. Which day? Well, when we see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, when we see these things happening, we need to be aware of what is going on, because, again, you have a watchman, and unless he gives warning, the people don't even know. And that tells you a lot, that people are going to be, well, we're not surprised, because Matthew 24 says they will be eating and drinking and giving in marriage, meaning life is going to go on as normal, and then suddenly things are going to happen. So, brethren, we need to be watching. The carousing, the drunkenness, cares of this life can keep us from taking note of, at least, again, we're not just dwelling on this to the point that we, you know, put ourselves in a funny farm. We're not talking about that. We're talking about taking note, recognizing what is going on. So I hope we look at this, and also verse 36, watch, therefore, and pray always. And when we do that, and some say, well, if I know in the past, it's like, well, if I pray that God will count me worthy, then there's a chance that I can escape all these things. But I've looked at this, and it's safer to look at it this way, and that is watch and pray, so you can get yourself spiritually right with God, so you can be close to God, so we're not carousing, so we're not living the way the world lives. Do that so you can be close to God and then be counted worthy to escape. Not all of us will escape, because there's going to be martyrdom. So this is the way I look at it. It's a safer way. And if you pray that you would be worthy to escape, I think that also puts your mind on the fact of what's going on. You know, you're recognizing what's taking place at the end time. So the question we have for us all now is, am I watching? Am I looking at the events that are transpiring in this world? Am I looking at those things that we are told to watch, even from our own literature? Are we watching the immorality of what's happening in the United States? Are we watching what's developing in the economy? Are we watching that? Are we watching what's going on in Europe? Are we watching what's going on in the Middle East? Because if we're not watching, if we do not see what's happening, what state of mind are we going to have? The watching is so that we know God's prophecies are being fulfilled. They are right. Puts us in a good spot, puts us in a good place, because we're always aware of seeing something, watching something that we're supposed to watch. God said to watch, there's a reason for it. God said, when you see, there's a reason for it. So I think we should do that and stay close to God. And maybe God will find a way to keep us from the time of Jacob's trouble that is ahead of us.